W252 DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More infrastructure funding from the bipartisan law passed last year. President Biden in New York City announcing money to repair the Hudson River tunnels, linking New York City with New Jersey, along with funds to upgrade Amtrak rails.
That's this project and others like it across the country are all about, making investments in America's cities and towns, in America's heartlands, in the rural areas as well. It's about making things here in America again.
President says the tunnel project will create 72,000 jobs. Winter storms are creating new troubles for residents from Texas to the Midwest. Ice and snow are leading to power outages and flight cancellations and delays. More than 1,400 flights have been grounded today. Embattled Congressman George Santos is recusing himself from two of his committee posts. He's facing several probes, including an investigation into his campaign finances. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called it the appropriate thing to do. This is ABC News. A new large-scale study looking at the risk of dementia for those over 60 shows many diet and lifestyle decisions could impact someone's chances of developing memory loss or Alzheimer's disease. ABC Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Jennifer Ashton tells us what lifestyle choices made the biggest impact on participants.
Alcohol was a big one, and the people who did the best in this study never consumed alcohol. Diet was actually the biggest factor, and again, healthy diet, lots of vegetables, and low saturated fat. Cognitive activity, which would be something like reading or playing cards, and then social contact, even chatting online, meeting with friends, people who engaged in those behaviors did really, really well as we age.
San Francisco officials are asking state authorities to slow down the rollout of driverless taxis. During tests in the city, some users reported robo-taxis stopping for no apparent reason. Results of the test could determine how quickly other cities move ahead with driverless cabs. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary. For us to find common ground, Civic Media.
Civic Media radio stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A man suspected of killing two women in Green Bay is arrested in Arkansas. The women's bodies were found inside an Eastside apartment Sunday morning. Police say evidence of the scene made them think right away the suspect had headed south. In fact, Arkansas police caught him in a traffic stop by mid-afternoon. Police say double homicides are rare in Green Bay. PFAS pollutants are getting lawmakers' attention. A state Senate committee is holding a hearing today on proposed regulations for the forever chemicals. They're used to make a lot of useful plastic products, but they're polluting Wisconsin's soil and water. Right now, PFAS are not regulated in Wisconsin. Governor Evers, for one, says he wants to change that. In sports, the Bucks host Charlotte tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
You wanted information as election results rolled in, and the Civic Media Network of radio stations delivered it live.
I was so impressed with your coverage, and I listened to you guys, and I got all the coverage. It was amazing.
Civic Media, the only network with news reporters and show hosts stationed across Wisconsin, sharing political insight not found anywhere else. Elections, or anytime, we are here for you, your local Civic Media radio stations, and streaming on the Civic Media app.
We are joined by the 57th Assembly District Representative, Lee Snodgrass. Thanks for being here.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
How do I need to adapt this based on what has changed since I first introduced it? Government does not move fast. I'm sure that's a shocker to all of you guys. Public policy doesn't change until public opinion changes.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, always on the Civic Media app.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's in your mind, Gene of Eau Claire?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's in your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. He sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself.
For many military veteran caregivers, their caregiving journey starts earlier in life and lasts longer. Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media. Civic Media.
Fox Valley regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
For? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So today, President Biden was front and center touting major investments in rail infrastructure, something we desperately need. Look, you know, I spent a lot of time in rail yards. We could use, especially on the freight rail side, we could really use some investment. And the passenger rail, wow, we're so far behind. We need massive investment. You want to help solve traffic problems? I don't know. Maybe some high-speed rail? That'd be a good idea. Maybe we get to that. But also today, our friends over at UE, the UE union, they've come out calling for public ownership of those rails. An interesting idea. That's why I've asked their president, their general president, Carl Rosen, to come talk with us. Carl is the general president of the United Electrical Radio and Machine Workers of America, ueunion.org, the website. Carl, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, I'm always happy to be here with you, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
So we got the president out touting the fact that we're investing in rails. We're gonna help make rail great again. I'm thrilled about that. Something we need to do. But you're saying, hey, we should maybe reclaim those rails. Am I getting that right?
Absolutely. I mean, it is true that we need, as a country, to invest in rail from many points of view. The pollution around rail yards, where a lot of working class people live, the impact on climate change of the combination of having old locomotives still on the rails because the rail companies aren't bothering to invest their profits in new equipment. The need to move a lot more freight off of trucks onto rail for protecting the environment, for reducing traffic congestion and accidents and wear and tear on the roads, which we all pay for as taxpayers, of course, to rebuild the roads that the trucks are pounding on the long distance runs that aren't necessary. So we really do need to invest in rail as a country. And so I'm glad to see these moves being made to rebuild these rail tunnels, and it'll put people to work, good jobs, good union jobs. Glad to see that. But why are we having to invest all this taxpayer money to help private corporations continue to make super profits and not bother investing at all in their own infrastructure that they make the money off of? They're playing the American people for suckers. And then you combine it with rail is a natural monopoly. It's like utilities. You know, it has to be regulated and even better to actually be run by the public. I mean, the best utilities in this country are the public utilities, which we've gotten away from in too many places. But in a lot of cases, we still have it, especially when you look at things like water and other things. You know, rails, you know, you're not going to have multiple railroad companies running up and down the same set of tracks and not coordinating. That just doesn't work. It's wherever they're operating, you know, they've kind of divided up the turf, they're monopolies. And we're basically allowing our government to let them run those monopolies purely for private profit. They aren't providing services. You've got companies all over the country screaming that they can't get the goods moved. It was a major contributing factor in how the whole supply chain got mucked up at the beginning of the pandemic, directly leading to the inflation that we've been facing, fortunately finally easing off, but that we have been facing over the last year and a half. And, you know, they don't contribute anything good, these railroad companies. And then they turn around and you see what they did to their workers this past contract cycle a couple months ago. Just atrocious. Because what they've done is they have cut down their number of staff so low in order to make even higher profits. Hell, they spent far more on stock buybacks this year than their entire labor bill.
Yeah, let that sink in. That's the remarkable part of all of this. I think, you know, stock buybacks is one of those things that just has me crazy in this moment. I mean, corporations, you know, the S&P 500 last year spent almost $1 trillion on stock buybacks. You know, that's money that should have been going to wages for working people. And we could spend an old day on this, but the railroads in particular, because you're right, they have slashed staff, they have cut service, they've made trains enormously long, and I would argue much more dangerous than they should be, all so they can squeeze a little bit more out. But what do you say, Carl, to the person who believes, look, you know, as bad as the companies are running things and as bad as they're doing, government would do it worse, Carl?
I say that's only because you're hearing the propaganda that's been put out there for a long time. Look at the U.S. mail system. Delivers a phenomenal amount of mail on a daily basis all over this country. And, you know, that's a public good. That's what we need to be looking at here. You look at the European countries, almost all of them have public ownership of the rails in one form or another, which also allows them to plan for the long term, invest in what they need to invest in. It's part of why they've got electric trains almost everywhere, so they aren't killing themselves with diesel fumes, because they can make those investments for the long term. And, you know, that's where the company's profit should have been going, was investing in infrastructure and upgrading for the future instead of just giving it away to their stockholders through the stock buybacks. But you're not going to get a private company to think about the long term. They're going to think about what's the next quarter look like for our stock owners. Yeah, and that's why it should be in private hands. It needs to be taken public.
Have we ever had that scenario in this country?
Well, you know, we've had different pieces of it at different times. Certainly, you know, the whole railroad industry collapsed. If you remember, we put together Conrail, which was a quasi government effort to get freight rail back on its feet. And Amtrak is... you know, is essentially a government agency, unfortunately continually choked because they give freight precedent over it. And again, because, you know, the highway interests have made sure that we never put too much money into passenger rail. I mean, there's historical things that have happened, like when GM purposely destroyed the rail system in Los Angeles, the local rail system, to make sure that everybody had to buy cars. I mean, you know, that's what we have to fight back against as working people. We have to get back to having public goods that help all of society, that help all working people, and not everything just done for some few individuals to be able to make huge profits.
Now, my Twitter trolls would say, Carl, that you're talking about socialism, and socialism never works, Carl. That's what they've told me. It's all bad. Okay. It's all bad.
They work very hard to undermine it, but certainly socializing the most important parts of our society is the only way that we're going to progress as a human race.
Now, you brought up an interesting point about, you know, congestion and traffic. Everybody I know complains about how bad traffic is, especially truck traffic. And for me, you know, the investments of today will help alleviate some of that. And this is why I give Biden credit. At least we're moving in a direction to invest in this stuff. But I agree with you. We're investing in this stuff for some of the wrong reasons of enriching these big corporations. Is there any movement outside of your union saying, hey, you know, this doesn't make sense? Is there any legislative movement? Is there any movement of organizing going on? Is there any push for doing what you're talking about?
Sure. It's early in the process. you may have noticed that UE frequently is earlier in the process than some other unions come on board. You know, we were speaking out in the early 90s about the need to organize immigrant workers and not vilify them. And it took about 10 years and the rest of the labor movement got on board. So we're optimistic that a lot more of the union movement will come on board. But there are voices within the rail unions. There are groups of, you know, rank and file workers who are saying this is the way we need to go. There's statements being made by various leaders. I think people were just really astonished at how rotten these railroad companies were in the course of imposing these contracts, which
how can anyone, knowing the history of the railroads, not know that robber barons, that the rail barons are some of the worst of the worst? How can you not know that?
Right. Well, and then they have, unfortunately, a Democratic administration, Democratic Congress come in behind them in imposing these terms this time around, even though I know there were a good number of Democrats led, of course, by Bernie Sanders trying to push back against it. But, you know, it's shameful what folks ended up getting stuck here without the sick days.
I saw it as a moment, Carl, that I thought Democrats could have taken advantage of and said, look, this is a moment where we need everybody to get sick days. I never thought the rail workers were going to be allowed to strike. It doesn't happen. I knew they were going to impose something of a contract, but a national call to something higher, I expected, I wanted, I had hoped for. And I didn't get, and this is where Democrats, I think, fell down on this, especially on the messaging side of saying, look, for the economy's sake, we can't let this happen, but we got to get those guys sick days. We got to get those workers sick days. We got to get everybody sick days.
That's right. That's right. That it absolutely could have gone there. You know, they had majorities in both houses at the time, you know, but they come up with excuses why they can't get anything done. That damn filibuster. Oh, my gosh. You know, just got in the way yet again. We're so sorry. It's one excuse or another, and you know, this is why people have lost faith in the Democratic Party. The Republicans don't let things hold them back when they get into office.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that we've got an ineffective Democratic Party and a Republican Party that hates working people. It's a weird moment that we're in. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Carl Rosen. Carl is the general president of the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America, UEUnion.org, the website, if you want to take a look at the work that they're doing and their call to put railroads under public ownership. Check that out. I want to get your thoughts also. Your union's been on a roll, a completely different topic. You've been on a roll organizing. I know union density went down last year, but your union's been out there, you know, going like gangbusters. What are you doing?
Well, we're finding the workers who want to organize and helping them organize themselves is what we're doing. We're punching way above our weight. It's way beyond what you know, we could do just based on, you know, the traditional, very staff intensive model of organizing. We're putting the power right in the workers' hands. And who's especially interested in doing this are younger workers, folks who have come of age in the working class since the turn of the century. They realize this system is not working for them and the government's not going to fix it. And the big business isn't going to fix it. They're going to have to fix it themselves by organizing. And so, you know, we're finding places where there's just a tremendous response. And one area, and we organize in all kinds of sectors. So, we've got organizing going on in manufacturing, in the service sector, in government subcontractors, et cetera. But one area we're having a lot of success right now is graduate workers at major universities who are, and it's research assistants as well as teaching assistants. Historically, research assistants were hard to organize. You know, because of the nature of their work and the expectation of where they were going to be going and what their futures look like. And all of that's changed as the academic institutions have, you know, reduced the number of quality jobs there. And then as they see what's happening with big business. And so we've been very fortunate. We just landed first contracts at the University of New Mexico in New Mexico State for about 2,500 workers. I'm right now helping lead negotiations for 3,800 graduate workers at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. We're expecting another group of about 1,500 fellows to unionize with us there here shortly when we get a labor board unit certification. And then we earlier this month had a unit of over 3,000 graduate workers at Northwestern University outside Chicago vote 93% to join UE. And today, as we speak, there are two elections going on, one at Johns Hopkins and another one in Baltimore and the other at the University of Chicago, each with 3,000 additional graduate workers who are all voting to join UE. And they're helping organize each other. This is back to the basics of the labor movement from the 1930s, when the CIO was organized. My union was not organized by a bunch of professional organizers coming in. It was organized by the workers in those workplaces who built really strong unions and built unions they were proud of. They were their unions, right? It totally changes the sense of what your union is about when you are able to organize it yourself and you're not reliant on somebody higher up the bureaucracy who's making a lot of the key decisions. So we're giving that power to the workers to organize themselves and take it in the direction they need to meet their needs and giving them the backing they need as they do it and the training and the framework, but they're taking it and running with it. It's just tremendous.
Yeah, it's about empowering people. And look, you know, you're right. A lot of the younger people I talk to, they've watched their parents be ground down. They've watched the, you know, wages be suppressed. They've watched healthcare benefits get more expensive, retirement being eviscerated. They've watched them lose jobs. They've watched their parents' generation struggle in ways that they've decided, you know what? We're not going to do it. And good on them. It's about time we stop. Well, it's about time we stop taking it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's where they're at. And, this is why I was referencing people who have come of age since the turn of the century. You know, it's not only that they aren't going to be as well off as their parents. They can see that their parents aren't as well off as their grandparents, because this has been going on since the 1980s, maybe even the late 70s, the end of Jimmy Carter, and then certainly full slam with Reagan and then, you know, Bush and Clinton and Bush. I mean, it just was continuous. And then, you know, Obama squandered his opportunity when he didn't go big in the recovery from the financial crash. And instead, we just bled for 8 years. And then we got Trump, you know, because of that, and bled some more. Fortunately, enough folks learned enough lessons. We had some good fights during the course of the last decade that really challenged this income and wealth inequality. Fight for 15 and Occupy Wall Street, all of those things that I think helped create the conditions where, you know, we had at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, both parties were kind of forced to cough up some money that made a difference for working people. We didn't see that in 2008, unfortunately, but we did this time. And it really helped a lot of folks. And it also helped create the conditions where there's less job fear right now and therefore more willingness to organize. And that's important. We need to keep that going. Federal Reserve Board is bound and determined to break that if they can. That's what's going on with these interest rate hikes. They want to break the back of working people again. And we need to make noise and oppose it. And we need to change the system.
No, I'm right there with you. It's something we've got to do. So last question I've got, if someone wants to organize, they want to become a UE member, what do they do?
Go to our website, ueunion.org, O-R-G. And so it's ueunion.org. And there's space on there where you can send in questions, concerns, and register that you're interested in organizing with us. I'd also encourage folks to reach out to the Emergency Workplace Organizing Committee, EWOC, which is a joint project of UE and DSA. And they can also help you get started on figuring out how to improve conditions at your workplace. Even if you're not ready to organize a union yet, you can still start to talk to your fellow workers about what you can do to improve things there.
There you go. Carl, always great talking with you. Good seeing you, buddy. Keep up the great work. I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Will do. Looking forward to it. Take care, Rick. Thanks.
Good job. Congrats on the organizing. And look, you know, this call for public ownership of rails. I want to hear your thoughts. Is this a good idea, bad idea? Should we reclaim the rails? Should we reclaim the commons, our water, our sewer, our roads, our bridges, our parking authorities, all of the things we've surrendered over the last several decades? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
A couple emails from folks losing their mind over the idea of reclaiming the rails for the public. I'm not opposed to the idea. Look, it's a monopoly. You've got one set of rails. It's not like you can have competing companies on those rails. And you look at the fact that, you know, it's a monopoly. They've got this kind of outweighted power to do whatever they want. And the contract fight last year was one of those things that, you know, was infuriating to me, because that was an opportunity to make lives better. And I think Democrats fell down on the job. And it wasn't all their fault. There was some problems all around on the messaging. But if you've got the president's ear, and this is where I give Biden, you know, some slack, because there are voices competing on both sides. There's the corporate wing of the Democratic Party. No, we can't get too far because, you know, we need corporate America to not go totally on the side of the Republicans. Even though Republicans are kicking corporate America around a little bit, it's an interesting moment. And you've got the more progressive folks who are saying, look, we've got to make lives better. We got to do some stuff. You know, there was a moment where you could have gone, look, there was a compromise point. Because it wasn't like the railroads couldn't afford to provide sick days for those workers. It's not like they couldn't hire a couple more railroaders. It's not like they couldn't make some adjustments to their precision scheduling railroading. It's not like they couldn't. They didn't want to. And this is the problem with what's going on in our society today. You got all these corporations who are making huge amounts of profit. They could make lives better. They don't want to. They want to buy back their shares of stock. You know, when these big companies, you know, go on these stock buyback programs, the railroads are a perfect example. Billions of dollars in stock buybacks. You know what those stock buybacks represent? Wages that didn't get paid to those workers. Sick days that didn't get paid to those workers. The jobs that have been crushed over the last several decades. When I was a kid, and I remember this, and this is going back a while, there were like 10 guys on a train. You had a couple people sitting in the caboose. You had a couple people, you know, walk in the middle. You had a couple people in the front. There were a lot of people on the train because they used to, used to yell at us when we used to jump on and off of them. Now you got two. They want to go down to one. So all of those salaries, all those benefits, all that stuff, where'd that go? It went to the shareholders. It went to the wealthy. It went to the CEO. It went to stock buybacks. And then they make these trains miles long. I go into rail yards often. When a train comes in and it's crossing the road, you're sitting for a while because they're miles long. Because we can't have multiple crews. We can't be more efficient in how we send things. So we got to wait for the big giant trains. And it's getting worse. Service is worse. Scheduling is worse. Working conditions are worse. Profits. That's what's really important. So if the product that you're getting out of it isn't what you need, is there not a way to change that? If the only thing that's working well on the railroads is they're making a lot of money for a handful of people, maybe. And this is where I give Carl credit. I give the UE credit. Coming out and say, you know, it's time to reclaim the commons. I think it's time to reclaim our water and sewer. It's time to reclaim our parking authorities. It's time to reclaim our roads and bridges and you name it. because we are the ones that keep investing in it. We're the ones, every time they run it into the ground, it falls back. It falls.
WAUK. Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network. CivicMedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. More infrastructure funding from the bipartisan law passed last year. President Biden in New York City announcing money to repair the Hudson River tunnels, linking New York City with New Jersey, along with funds to upgrade Amtrak rails.
That's this project and others like it across the country all about, making investments in America's cities and towns, in America's heartlands, in the rural areas as well. It's about making things here in America again.
President says the tunnel project will create 72,000 jobs. Winter storms are creating new troubles for residents from Texas to the Midwest. Ice and snow are leading to power outages and flight cancellations and delays. More than 1,400 flights have been grounded today. Embattled Congressman George Santos is recusing himself from two of his committee posts. He's facing several probes, including an investigation into his campaign finances. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy called it the appropriate thing to do. This is ABC News.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Temperatures in the double digits below zero last night are still creating challenges in Wisconsin today. Car batteries, tires, and antifreeze can be compromised by temperatures that cold. Police recommend people not leave their cars alone with the engine running. That leaves you vulnerable to someone stealing anything inside your car or driving off with the vehicle. A complaint has been filed against Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Janet Protasiewicz. The complaint alleges Protasiewicz is violating Wisconsin's Code of Judicial Conduct by talking about her positions on issues like abortion, same-sex marriage, and redistricting. Those issues might come before the high court. A UW law professor tells the State Journal Protasiewicz has not crossed any lines. In sports, the Bucks host Charlotte tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
You wanted information as election results rolled in and the Civic Media Network of radio stations delivered it live.
I was so impressed with your coverage. And I listened to you guys and I got all the coverage. It was amazing.
Civic Media, the only network with news reporters and show hosts stationed across Wisconsin, sharing political insight not found anywhere else. Elections or anytime, we are here for you. Your local Civic Media radio stations and streaming on the Civic Media app.
The Devil's Advocates.
Aaron Mostovsky, who rioted at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, was dressed as Captain Caveman. QAnon shaman meets Law and Order?
Right. I mean, he pulled it off a whole lot better than Aaron Mostovsky.
Well, let me read a quote from the judge in this case. I hope you'll leave some of this fantasy world behind. Mostovsky was sentenced to 8 months in prison.
Looking at the guy, he might be one who loses his mattress on the first day. Breaking news.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
The Devil's Advocates.
Mitch McConnell did make a public statement, right? After he voted to acquit.
Oh, nothing says the president can't be prosecuted.
Set the example for your caucus.
Convince your caucus as to why the man is not fit to serve. How do you not use your leadership to say, you guys, this is crazy. We can't do this, and here is exactly why. Because now of the two major political parties, one of them is under the thumb of a fascist insurrectionist.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Stories come to life at your local parks and forests. They're places of wonder, and they're closer than you think. Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
And intentionally bringing the evil of bigotry, intolerance, and even fascism in from the fringe of politics to sit in the seat of power. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is shameful and it's dangerous. Evil swarms when so-called leaders meekly give permission for crazies to use the government power to rule over us.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday we spent a little time talking about the Nazi homeschool Evidently now the story has broken that the Ohio Department of Education, they're investigating the what they're calling the openly anti-Semitic and racist Nazi homeschooling group with thousands of members across the country operating in Upper Sandusky, Ohio. And look, trust me, this is just the tip of the iceberg. The kind of underground organizing by these hate groups that's just now finally coming out and being exposed should scare all of us, you know, especially people who believe that public education is how we give people opportunity to grow and move this nation forward. Our folks don't want that. No. I'm here to share some thoughts on his most recent piece on what's going on in the Upper Buck School District. Because, look, the attack on public education is in full rage mode in school districts across the country. And it's no more visible than in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. And here to share some thoughts on what that's going on, I've asked Cyril Michaleko to come talk with us. Cyril is the editor-in-chief over at the Bucks County Beacon. They got a new piece out on it titled, It Takes a Village, Expelling Right-Wing Extremism from Bucks County School Districts. Cyril, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
So what's going on? Let's start with the first question. What's going on? What's happening in your neck of the woods?
I mean, what we're seeing in Bucks County and specifically in Central Bucks School District, is what we're seeing across the country, unfortunately, which is just an all-out right-wing and I would say even Christian nationalist assault on public education. This is an organized AstroTurf national kind of campaign. And they've kind of like activated, you know, their little cells of, you know, extremist parents that want to just transform public education into this very narrow, conservative, Christian, kind of factory, if you will, where they just want to reproduce kind of like, you know, little versions of themselves and impose their will on everyone else, right? So this is like, for example, you know, book banning has been one of the big issues.
Right.
And the thing is, like, parents have the option to kind of like deny their kids access to certain books, right? But that's not good enough. Like, they want to deny it for every single child and every single parent, you know, and the books that they're targeting, obviously, a lot of them are by LGBTQ writers, writers of color, or characters that represent these different communities.
Right. But what do you say, Cyril, to them who I know their response back is going to be, well, the other side is doing exactly what you're saying to us and we're just fighting back. I mean, because that's the response I get. They're ramming this down our throats and we don't want it. What do you say to that?
I mean, that's just, you know, I think you have to put this in like historical perspective. And this is just kind of like part of like a long historical backlash, one against progress, right? And then two against, you know, public education. And, you know, it dates back in, you know, this right-wing movement, they like to use the kind of the banner of like parental rights, right? And that's something that's been invoked like throughout history, starting with when the United States introduced compulsory education, you know, for kids, right? Parents were pissed off. They thought it was the government kind of taking away their authority. And so they were against that, right? And this parental rights movement, which has really just been like I said, like a right wing and Christian backlash, you know, there's a thread that you can follow throughout history. So, you know, for example, you know, the Scopes trial, right? It was the parental rights movement that didn't want evolution taught in science class. They wanted biblical creationism, right? It was the parental rights movement again that reared its head in the 50s with the Supreme Court's Brown versus Board of Education decision. You know, it was the parental rights backlash against them saying that segregation was unconstitutional. So like the parental rights movement time and again has been on the wrong side of history. And that's just what we're seeing today. Like this whole Moms for Liberty kind of movement, it comes from this lineage,
Now, look, I'm a parental rights person. I don't want the government telling me what I have to do with my kids or any of that. But there's a point at which you go, I don't know, Nazi homeschooling. I think there's got to be something there. I think the kind of absolute extremism that we're seeing, I think there's got to be something there. I don't think that parental rights thing is absolute and unfettered. But I do believe in parental rights and how I want my kids educated. I think there's some fairness there. And this is where these right wing groups, they grab a kernel of reality and they grab, you know, people like me who say, yeah, we should have that. And then they take it too far. And I think this is where this is going. It's taking us to this extreme with the goal, at least I think, of destroying public education so they can privatize and profitize.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a lot of these people and the ones that are running for school boards are, you know, essentially arsonists that want to burn down the whole system from within and raise it. And like you said, in order to kind of like privatize education and push like charter schools, et cetera. But, you know, and again, like, you know, of course, like parents have rights and they have rights to send their kids to like private schools if they want to. But they can't like impose those, you know, their vision on everyone else. And what we're seeing, it's just like, it's, you know, it's not like radical things they're going after, right? They're going after teaching history, right? They're going after books. They're going after like teachers being able to have like discussions about history. And history's messy, right? It's complicated. You know, we're an imperfect nation striving for perfection and trying to kind of, you know, continue to progress and to get better. And I think like the danger is, you know, you have, you know, right-wing activists like Christopher Rufo that, you know, created this concept of like critical race theory. And he even admitted it himself. Like the whole idea of that is that to be some kind of like generalized smear and term in order for these parent groups, right, to use and throw at anytime they don't like something.
Sure. No, and look, it's all about the feeding the outrage candy. I get that. And scary things. There's a theory out there, and it's critical, and it's about race. So all three of those words are kind of buzzwords to get you kind of ramped up. I get that, because they do this masterfully. The right has always been good at feeding outrage candy to people. And it's our job to, you know, to kind of put it aside. But here's the thing, the question that I have. You know, how much of this is just a handful of crazy people who are these religious zealots, are Christian Sharia law folks, and how much of this is the rest of society, of the community, and how much traction are they really getting? Do you get any sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think they're a minority, but they're a loud minority, and they've been able to seize power, right, in these school boards. You know, and like, you know, in Central Bucks School District, you know, this is like an affluent Philadelphia, you know, suburb. It's not very rural by any means, right? And, you know, what you're seeing there is just like, one, this school board, you know, was able to seize power thanks in part to, you know, Paul Martino, who's like this right-wing venture capitalist who sunk over $700,000 into school board races across the state, right? Because he saw an opportunity. This, you know, dates back to like, you know, COVID and the outrage at that kind of, you know, fomented. So he saw this crisis as an opportunity, right? And that's why he was sinking these money into what turned out to be very extremist candidates. And so, for example, like I was trying to make the connection to like, you know, the Christian right and the Christian nationalism. You know, besides the Bucks County Beacon one, I should just mention, like, there's been great reporting, you know, by other journalists out here. WHYY's Emily Rizzo, USA Today's Network's Chris Olery, and the Inquirer's Maddie Hanna. So, you know, I think people should, if they want to find out more, they can turn to them as well as the Bucks County Beacon. But back to my original point is, you know, for example, the school board recently passed a library policy in order for parents to challenge books, right? But what they didn't tell everyone was that once that policy was passed, then they had to draft administrative regulations, right? In order for like staff and librarians and teachers and administrators to be able to apply that policy. You know, so they outsourced the drafting of this, of these administrative regulations, to the Independence Law Center, which is the legal arm of the Pennsylvania Family Institute, right? And so the Pennsylvania Family Institute is a right-wing anti-LGBTQ Christian organization that back in March, and this is something that we reported on, started recruiting informants in public schools because, according to them, you know, teachers are proselytizing children into sexual and Marxist ideologies by using coercion and grooming techniques.
They're indoctrinating the children.
Yes. So it's like the John Birch Society meets QAnon with these people. And so these, so one, they outsource the crafting of the library policy to this organization. And then two, when they got wind that this story was coming out by the USA Today Network's Chris Olry, they sent an email to district-wide email to all the parents to kind of preempt that and put their own spin on it. But what they didn't, so they tell the parents that, you know, yes, we contacted this independence law firm, which it's actually not called firm, it's called the Independence Law Center, but didn't provide the details about who they're affiliated with. Because the devil's in the details. And I think a large swath of the parents, I would say a large majority of the parents, would probably be, at least have some concerns, right, with them kind of turning to this anti-LGBTQ law firm, this Christian law firm, to craft policies where local right-wing activist parents have been targeting LGBTQ books.
Yeah, because the Independence Center, Law Center, doesn't sound bad
right.
Until you find out what, you know, because this is what, again, the right does a masterful job of this. You know, the Center for, you know, the Love of Puppies, you know, and they at its core, some of the most anti-worker, anti-society, you know, anti-social behavior that you can find. Yet, again, under the couching under the terms of some kind of twisted religiosity. You know, I've got friends who are homeschooler folks who, you know, they tell me they're creating Christian warriors. And that kind of language is a little concerning because, you know, we talk about how much we don't want Sharia law, but yet we're seeing springing up around us a kind of a, you know, that kind of extremism.
No, I mean, absolutely. And like you said, like, they take everything too far. And the latest scandal was like a librarian posted a quote by Eli Wiesel, a Holocaust survivor, Nobel Peace Prize winner, that says, "We must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented." Now, according to the school district, this violated one of their other new policies, Policy 321, that kind of reaches towards neutrality in the schools and the classroom, right? So they forced this librarian to take this down, right, until like public, you know, outcry and backlash and then, you know, media scrutiny. And then, you know, what they did is like, so not only that, to make matters worse, a while back, they hired a PR firm, right, that they're spending $15,000 a month on to help launder their image. So now they have this PR firm that's trying to like spin all of these crazy extremist policies and actions that they're taking. And the firm, what they tried to say was that, you know, the using, of course, like the passive voice and trying to kind of like deflect responsibility from people who, you know, from the actual people who ordered this librarian to take it down, was that they wanted the quote like accompanied with the book, you know, that the quote came from. But the book, that the quote didn't come from an actual book, it was from his acceptance speech for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
And so like this,
I thought you were going to tell me they banned the book. That would have been, spot on. So let me ask you this, because there are a lot of people listening going, okay, well, this is Bucks County, Pennsylvania. It's not my school district. This wouldn't happen in my backyard. Can't happen in my neck of the woods. How much of this stuff is spreading across the country, do you think? How much of what you're seeing is being replicated in other places?
It's everywhere. Honestly, it is everywhere. You know, Moms for Liberty are one of the big protagonists of this movement, right? And then you just, you know, look what's happening in Florida, right? You know, one with like Ron DeSantis and with his like don't say gay laws and just kind of like, you know, booting out and we're going now towards like higher education. They like boarded out the board of trustees for like New College and replaced him with like Christopher Rufo, who I'd mentioned earlier, you know, and like a gaggle of, you know, his right wing, you know, fellow travelers. And even like, you know, with the book banning, I mean, it's huge now. And it, you know, they try to, again, it's, they're trying to say these books are like grooming kids, but they're going after classics too. Like in Florida, in a school district, they took off the shelves, actually, Fahrenheit 451, right, by Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, my producer, he actually did a piece not too long ago, a school district down, I think, York, down in the York area. They were banning a bunch of books, but Mein Kampf was still on the shelves. You know, it's one of those things where you go, okay, where is your priority? And again, Nazi homeschool. It's one of those things that's kind of frightening to me of where we're going. So I guess, you know, the last line of questioning, you know, what do we do? Because look, you know, here's the reality. I talk to parents and the issues that some of these groups use as that lightning rod. Like, you know, there was a school district that had a drag show, you know, in the classroom. And you know, I don't think that's the place for it. Not against drag shows, but in the classroom, not the place for it. But, you know, how do you deal with the parents who are going, look, you know, look what they've done. You know, I don't want this, but I don't want that, the extremism either. Is there somewhere in the middle ground here? Do you see any hope forward?
I don't, right? Like, I don't see how you're going to reach like a middle ground with a lot of these folks, right? Folks that are accusing librarians and teachers of being groomers because books are
Not them. Look, there's a point at which you got to leave them. You're never reaching the fives. But it's taking people like me who go, you know what? I don't want drag shows in the classroom. I'm told every day there's a drag show in the classroom. These are what these extremists are saying. Every day there's drag shows. In fact, they're forcing my children to come to school and drag. I don't want that. Is there an education process? Is there a way to go? That's not happening. Other than it's not happening in my school, and it's not. I asked my children. It's not happening.
I mean, I think there's a couple of things that we can do here. And, you know, one, we were talking about like banning books, which is happening, right? You know,
which even is like, stupid.
And you, I think you mentioned York County in Pennsylvania, like, you know, they banned like, I Am Rosa Parks, right? And it was just like this list. And then it was like predominantly like African-American authors or subjects, topics. You know, what happened there is, and this was interesting, is that students organized against this and they went to school early and started protesting before school early. And it gained like international attention. And eventually the board, you know, because they were so shamed and disgraced, you know, had to reverse the ban. So
there's the answer right there. The young people are going to save us because, well, mom and dad are screwed up.
Yeah, and we're seeing that now happen in Central Bucks where students are getting involved. So, you know, we're seeing that happen, but on you know, on the flip side of that, you know, obviously like parents have to get involved and people need to vote in these local elections, right? And just kind of get like reasonable voices back into school boards. And what they have to do is just kind of like cut through the noise and, you know, social media and kind of like, you know, digital activism is fine, but you know, you really got to go door to door and talk to these folks, to your neighbors and organize them in that way.
Right there. Cyril, I appreciate the time. Keep up the great work. Hope folks will take a look at your most recent piece. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at it. It takes a village to expel these right-wing extremists. We'll get links out and you can check out buckscountybeacon.com. Cyril Michalico, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks again, Rick.
Thanks so much. Want to hear your thoughts. What are you hearing from your local schools? Do you see this kind of insanity in your local school? And are you okay with it? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1940, and Ida Mae Fuller received a check from the U.S. government. That check was for $22.54. It may seem like a small amount, but the check represented something much larger. It was the very first payment of Social Security. Ms. Fuller spent her working years as a teacher and then a legal secretary in Vermont. She paid into the new Social Security program for almost 3 years before she retired. One day, while running errands in Rutland, Vermont, she decided to stop at the Social Security office and find out more about the program. Ms. Fuller later recalled, "It wasn't that I expected anything, mind you, but I knew I'd been paying for something called Social Security, and I wanted to ask the people in Rutland about it." The office took her benefits claim and sent it to Washington, D.C. Ms. Fuller was the first in a batch of 1,000 claims forwarded to the Treasury Department for processing. She was 65 years old when she received her first check, and as good fortune would have it, Ida lived to see her 100th birthday. In the 35 years that followed, Ida received just under $23,000 in total Social Security benefits over the course of her retirement. In 2014, according to the Social Security Administration, over 59 million Americans will receive nearly $863 billion in benefits. Over the years, Social Security has been expanded to include people with severe disabilities and widows and orphans with survivor's benefits. Although politicians continue to squabble over the program and refuse to ensure its long-term solvency, Social Security remains one of the most significant programs enacted by the U.S. government for working people. In the aftermath of the 2008 Great Collapse on Wall Street that saw the retirement of millions of workers evaporate, Social Security continued, keeping upwards of 22 million seniors out of poverty. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. So, it's another one of these examples of people pointing their fingers saying, "I know you're cheating. I know. And then the three fingers pointing back at them. The person screaming the loudest is generally the person who's, I don't know, doing what they're screaming about. I look at this place, The Villages, down in Florida. They're the ones who do the golf cart thing. They have their Trump golf cart, you know, parades. And I think they had the boat that sank, if I'm not mistaken. I think that was part of them as well. Evidently, fourth resident of The Villages has now admitted that they voted twice in the 2020 election. Didn't seem to help much, still lost. But it's one of these things where you go, again, these four people out there going, "Oh, no, there are people voting twice. I know that." Yeah, they were looking at him in the mirror. Yeah, see how that works? They found him. They found him. They found the person cheating. Every morning they found that person looking back at him in the mirror. Why didn't they turn themselves in? And here's the thing. I actually got a response from someone who says, "But you said there's no voter fraud." I don't know where to go with that, other than they deliberately broke the law because they believed other people were, and now they think they're going to get away with it. It's stupid. I mean, wow. And again, this just to me is another one of those magnifying moments where you go, we're in trouble as a society. We really are. Because these are the people who were protesting. These are the people who are out in the streets saying our system's broken. And then, and are the reason that it's broken. You know, I've said in the past that, you know, the cost, the penalty to do what these four people have now admitted to doing is so high that no sane, rational, reasonable, thoughtful person would ever do it. And yet, there they are, four of them, neighbors. And you go, well, it's Florida. Okay, maybe that's the reason. Or maybe it's just, well, the cult? Wow. But I now amend. There is voter fraud, and Republicans seem to be the ones that keep doing it. Now, I hope they get full maximum penalties, because you know.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.